This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omacid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omacid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Happy Wednesday. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. It's afternoon. I hope you're enjoying a beautiful day outside today. There are hearings on Capitol Hill today. We knew that was going to happen because we had Congresswoman Ann Wagner on the show yesterday, and she was talking about this intelligence briefing that would take place. Basically, it's the same thing in the House that took place yesterday in the Senate. And we didn't really get a chance to discuss this yesterday, but you heard several times in the Senate hearing, they were like, we'll talk about this more in a classified setting. We'll talk about this more in a closed setting. And everybody was like, okay. It wasn't like a cop out. Everybody knows that when you're talking to, what was it, the director of the CEI, the National Security Advisor, what is the national, I always forget what Tulsi's, ODNI.
Director of National Intelligence.
Yeah. They're like all the same thing. They sound like it. They sound like the same thing to me. But you got all these, Kash Patel in there, director of FBI, all these people in there. And then the second they're like, well, we can talk about that, but in a closed setting, I automatically go, I can't believe you're having any of this in an open setting. Like, I'm sitting here thinking, how do you have a conversation in public about all of these things that you have to be way out in front in order to stop from happening, bad things. And that was kind of the crux of the conversation that I had with her that I kind of thought we should have maybe discussed more here. But what is the difference between the public hearings and the closed door hearings? How much substance is there? Now, granted, I understand the secrecy of it and the importance of that, not disrespecting the fact that you need to have private meetings. But how do the Republicans act in the open hearing versus the classified hearing? How do the Democrats act in the open hearing versus the closed door classified setting?
You'd have to picture that what we see is 90% performative, 10% substance, and that probably flips when you go behind doors, where you actually do have a little bit of performance still, because they have to maintain that because they don't want to be completely inconsistent. But that's where all the substance is happening after the cameras are off.
I wonder if the things that are talked about in that open space are even brought up or discussed in the closed door setting to dig a little bit deeper, to find out more details on the stuff that maybe they don't get to the bottom of when they are out in the open. So here's Congressman Jimmy Gomez. Where's he from? I don't have where he's from. Well, let's listen to him. He's questioning in the House, obviously, Representative Jimmy Gomez, in the House hearing. This is today. Listen
to your knowledge, do you know whether Pete Hegseth had been drinking before he leaked classified information?
I don't have any knowledge of Secretary Hegseth's personal habits.
Director Radcliffe, same question. Yes or no?
You know, no, I'm going to answer that. I think that's an offensive line of questioning. The answer is no. I find it interesting that you want to...
No,
I'm going to answer. You asked me a question. You want an answer?
No, listen.
You don't want to focus on the good work that the CIA is doing, that the intelligence community...
Director, I reclaim my time. Director, I reclaim my time. Here, I have huge respect for the CIA, huge respect for our men and women in uniform.
You sure?
But this was a question that's on the top of minds of every American.
No, it's not. This is the stupidest thing ever. It hadn't occurred to me that they would bring up this type of a hoax to throw at Pete Hegseth in this situation. Everybody wants to know. Mike Waltz said last night on Laura Ingraham that he's the one who created the chat. So if he's the one who created the chat, then the addition of this Goldberg, what's his first name? Jerry?
Jeff
Goldberg?
Jeff, yeah.
The addition of Jeff Goldberg to this group chat would have come from Waltz. There's nothing on this group chat that has been released that indicates that anybody is outside of sound mind. It's thoughtful. It's well articulated. It was successful. You have a situation where you've got people doing their job, having conversations respectfully, even some people dissenting or offering alternative viewpoints, and it's all done the way you would hope these types of things were done. The problem here is that we know about it. The problem here is that there was an author, a journalist from The Atlantic, added to this chat, and nobody knows how it was done. I have questions today as to whether or not there was some sort of play that was made here to get him on there, that it wasn't sort of happenstance or accident or oops, mistake that Mike Waltz or somebody else managed to, you know, oversee and oversight. I don't know what happened here. But to have this as an opportunity, when this congressman says, this is a question that's on the top of everybody's mind, you don't have any idea what the American people are thinking right now.
He stood in front of a podium in Europe holding a drink.
It was water.
So of course, we want to know if his performance is compromised. If people were asking if the General Austin was compromised because of a heart issue.
Was his performance compromised because of a successful strike? You want to know? You want to talk about accepting responsibility? Do you think you should accept responsibility for a successful strike to make Americans safer?
You want to focus on.
That's the CIA director, John Ratcliffe, pushing back, and as he should. This guy is a fool. This guy is a boob. He's a useful idiot for the Democrats up there to try to throw something else into the conversation. All you need is one person to openly say this, so that these stupid rags that are out there can write articles just referencing problems that they allege Pete Hegseth has had with alcohol that are not in any way, shape, or form a factor here. These Democrats are so, so low right now. They are so beaten down right now. They are so out of touch right now. And it's important to assess the situation for what it is. They got nothing. Meanwhile, every day that the sun comes up in the east and sets in the west, America is potentially under attack by people who hate us, who want to destroy us, and who want to take our place in the hierarchy of power and authority in the world. We are under attack all of the time. And the people who are sitting there at that dais answering the questions of these morons that California and the 34th district decide to send into Congress, they are sitting there with the knowledge of things that are threatening your livelihood right now. And this doofus wants to come here and ask if Pete Hegseth might have been drinking, to people who he knows wouldn't have the answers. If they knew if he was drinking at that time, that would imply that they were together. If they were together, why would they need to be on a group chat? They're so, so, so far gone. They are so lost. They don't understand what the American people want. They don't care to serve the American people. The structure that's been set up to preserve them in government and the big government apparatus that has propped them up for so long is crumbling beneath their feet, and they don't know what to do. So they lash out like petulant children. And it's going to cost them in the long run. Somehow or another, this mistake that was made, whatever manifested to create the situation that was a very unfortunate situation where this journalist was added to this group chat, that is a mistake that needs to be remedied. Our mistakes in this administration so far, the mistakes that have been made by the Trump administration so far, haven't killed anybody. And you can go through a laundry list of times in the Biden administration where their negligence or their apathy towards intelligence, towards preparation, towards caring more about the actual mission and the American people than they care about themselves had cost lives or put them in a position where they could have cost lives. What was it, Delta Force? They released a photograph in the Biden administration that showed all the faces of the members of Delta Force. Whoops. Do you remember the big, huge blow up in the weeks of coverage that got? I don't.
Man, I barely remember that story.
I heard him talking about it on Fox News earlier today, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's right. Scratch my head. I remember that. That could still be a threat to those people's lives. There is a situation that needs to be remedied in the future. I'm sure that they are on it to make sure that this doesn't happen again. The mission was successful. There's an opportunity for learning and growth here, but that's not how Jimmy Gomez from California, from Riverside, California, sees it. He sees an opportunity to throw Pete Hegseth down and try to put some sort of boozing hoax over the top of this story just to make sure that he can score a political point on it. That's gross. It's unpatriotic. It's un-American.
Well, he's just so worried. This is what's getting lost in the shuffle of this detail of the story, is that Democrats are right now apparently so concerned about the security of our country that all the other details of the last 4 years, not just the individual stories like the ones you just mentioned about the Delta Force, but the security of the country's borders, the security of the country, our national interests, our international interests, the way we've used our troops, none of that matters at the moment because they have a talking point to say we're the ones who are responsible.
I don't understand how long they can go like this. I don't understand if they think that they're going to gain votes like this. I mean, they have yet to realize, I guess, that the majority of Americans did, in fact, vote for this. And this isn't even the big, scary thing that they want it to be. And I hesitate to think of how they would behave if this were a situation that did end up costing American lives. I could definitely see how both sides, bipartisan, would want to correct this issue and get to the bottom of it. But the gloating that takes place from the Democrat side over something that is a non-issue, it's really quite something to me. I want to play here a little bit from the press briefing. It's taking place right now. Let's see what they have to say.
Trillions of dollars in private and foreign investments. Every single day, more money is pouring into our country, which will create more jobs for hardworking Americans. Today, Schneider Electric pledged to invest more than $700 million in the United States to boost American energy infrastructure and AI. On Monday, Hyundai announced a $20 billion investment in the United States, including $5.8 billion for a new steel plant in Louisiana, which will create nearly 1,500 high-paying jobs. President Trump is truly turning America back into a manufacturing superpower. Yesterday, President Trump marked National Medal of Honor Day by meeting with 21 of our nation's bravest heroes and incredible patriots who have been awarded the highest military honor. Beautiful picture. The president also signed a historic executive order to protect the integrity of American elections by strengthening voter citizenship verification and banning foreign nationals from interfering in U.S. elections. These are the common sense solutions that only Democrats could oppose. But voters deserve elections they can trust, and critical confidence is being restored thanks to President Trump's leadership. Later this afternoon in the East Room, President Trump will mark Women's History Month by honoring the exceptional women around our country, including the highly talented women in his administration and his cabinet. And on an additional scheduling update, the president will hold a press conference in the Oval Office today at 4 o'clock p.m. to announce tariffs on the auto industry. And I will leave that to him to make that announcement later. Unfortunately, all of this good is happening for our country. This administration is working hard on behalf of the American public every day, but the mainstream media continues to be focused on a sensationalized story from the failing Atlantic magazine that is falling apart by the hour. Here are the facts. The National Security Advisor has taken responsibility for this matter, And the National Security Council immediately said, alongside the White House counsel's office, that they are looking into how a reporter's number was inadvertently added to this messaging thread. We have said all along that no classified material was sent on this messaging thread. There were no locations, no sources, or methods revealed, and there were certainly no war plans discussed. The Atlantic has even admitted this themselves. Their release of these internal messages validates the truth, which we have been saying all along. If this story proves anything, it proves that Democrats and their propagandists in the mainstream media know how to fabricate, orchestrate, and disseminate a misinformation campaign quite well. And there's arguably no one in the media who loves manufacturing and pushing hoaxes more than Jeffrey Goldberg. Goldberg is an anti-Trump hater. He is a registered Democrat. Goldberg's wife is also a registered Democrat and a big Democrat donor who used to work under who? Hillary Clinton. This is the same Jeffrey Goldberg who infamously lied about weapons of mass destruction to get us into the Iraq War, which cost trillions of dollars and thousands of American soldiers. And how else has Goldberg discredited himself? By absurdly claiming that President Trump was Vladimir Putin during the 2016 campaign. By peddling the Russia, Russia, Russia hoax that tried to hijack President Trump's first term. By inventing the suckers and losers hoax to help Joe Biden in the 2020 election. By peddling a hoax about President Trump involving Gold Star families to help Kamala Harris in the 2024 election, which our campaign at the time vigorously denied. Jeffrey Goldberg didn't care. There's more, but we don't have all day, and we can now add the Signal hoax to this very long list. The real story here is the overwhelming success of President Trump's decisive military action against Houthi terrorists. On March 15th, President Trump ordered a series of military operations against the terrorist Houthis to defend U.S. shipping assets in the Red Sea, restore freedom of navigation for international shipping, and defend the United States from enemy threats. United States forces successfully struck dozens of targets across Houthi-controlled territory. And as a result of these actions, several Houthi leaders were killed, including the Houthi drone chief, his deputy, and several of their drone experts and other key leaders. We also destroyed command and controlled facilities, weapons manufacturing facilities, and advanced weapons storage locations. And it's important to remember why this powerful action took place in the first place. Because of Joe Biden's incompetence and pathetic weakness on the world stage for years, the Houthi terrorists grew emboldened. Immediately after taking office in 2021, Joe Biden removed the Iran-backed Houthis from the Foreign Terrorist Organization and specifically designated Global Terrorist List. Did anybody in this room ask the Biden administration at the time why they made such a stupid mistake? This reckless action undid the designation put in place by President Trump during his first term, and what followed was predictable and devastating. The Houthis targeted U.S. military ships and aircraft, hit commercial ships, including U.S.-flagged vessels, threatened our personnel overseas, and attacked our allies in the region. This resulted in more than a year of U.S.-flagged commercial ships being prevented from safely sailing through the Suez Canal, the Red Sea, and the Gulf of Aden. This had a massive negative impact on global trade of the economic security of the United States. Joe Biden was the commander-in-chief, and he sat on his hands while the United States of America was bullied and embarrassed by terrorists. President Trump and his team are putting a stop to these threats in restoring American strength around the world. The Trump peace-through-strength approach means no terrorist force will stop American commercial and naval vessels from freely sailing the waterways of the world. But unfortunately, this is not what the Democrats and the media want to talk about. They are focused on a coordinated campaign to try and sow chaos in this White House. And this has been the most successful first 2 months of any administration ever, which is exactly why they are doing this. We are not going to bend in the face of this insincere outrage. And here's just one example of how bad faith the Democrats' criticisms are. Democrat Senator Mark Warner is hysterical over the use of Signal, which is an approved encrypted app, in the killing of Houthi terrorists. But Senator Warner himself used Signal to work with a lobbyist for a Russian oligarch to connect with the disgraced Steele dossier author who started the Russia hoax. which Jeffrey Goldberg later reported on. How ironic. We're not going to lose focus of the bottom line, which is that Joe Biden's weakness enabled and emboldened Houthi terrorists, and President Trump's strength and resolve eliminated those terrorists.
So Carolyn Leavitt speaking from the White House press conference. I'll probably take some questions here. We'll continue to monitor that as we move through the show. I appreciate that they are pushing back on this a little bit, and we do need to find out more information as to how the entire situation came to be. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, Droy Murdoch, a little bit earlier in the show than usual, nationally syndicated columnist, is going to talk to us about some private charity efforts abroad that are putting USAID to shame. We're going to be back in just a minute with Droy Murdoch. Don't go away.
Cussed out, mama pushed daddy around.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
Well, welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. We were just listening to the press conference at the White House right now. We're going to continue to monitor that and get back to it if they break any news. I want to get to our guest a little bit earlier than usual, but that's not a problem at all. Droy Murdoch is with us, nationally syndicated columnist and Project 21 ambassador, Fox News contributor as well. Droy, welcome back.
Annie, great to talk to you.
You know, one thing that hasn't been talked about, I guess maybe as much this week, because some other things have boiled up to the top, the Doge cuts and what they're able to find as far as waste, fraud, and abuse have been pretty epic, one might say. And I think that it's important to understand when this money is being pulled back, especially from like USAID and all of that, that the ability of people to be helped outside of government laundered money, they might even be helped better if the government weren't involved in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. The idea is, oh, my God, if the government pulls out of this activity, people will starve, planes will fall out of the sky, what have you. And in fact, there is a thriving domestic and to some degree international philanthropic effort to help people with everything from health challenges to general economic growth and upliftment, human development, what have you. And USAID certainly has no monopoly in that sort of thing. And so much of the stuff they do is, you know, if you're lucky, it's counterproductive if it's not totally, completely destructive. And a good sort of alternative to that is the Atlas Network, with which I work. I've been associated with the Atlas Network since 1994. And we work with about 500 free market think tanks and civil society organizations around the world. The U.S. about 500 organizations in the U.S. about 100 countries, I should say. And so we're doing things, for example, to compare. In Sri Lanka, USAID spent almost $8 million, $7.9 million to teach Sri Lankan journalists how to avoid binary gender language. It's almost hard to pronounce, you know, the idea that they're just men and just women. Instead, it should be this whole, 56 or 100 or 300 different genders, what have you. Although it'd be kind of silly and useless and not productive. Contrast that to $600,000 that the Atlas Network has spent since 2015 working with an organization called the Advocata Institute in Sri Lanka. And they've been working with them to try to persuade the government to reduce its activities, move away from price controls on various products, to reduce tariffs on everything from maize to feminine hygiene products, and essentially has gotten the policymakers to move away from their big spending, big borrowing, big taxing ways, and try to move more towards free market, limited government, and higher prosperity type situation. And again, the money that's being spent is not U.S. government money, it's private sector philanthropic money.
Yeah.
So the U.S. taxpayers are not on the hook for this kind of thing.
You know, I'm reading this article that you have right now. People can check out in the Daily Signal. It's about this a little bit. I'm reading this one paragraph here. It says USAID spent $7.9 million to teach Sri Lankan journalists how to avoid, quote, binary gender language. And you know, when you remember, if somebody wants to invest their own money and try to persuade people to do that, I don't know that I really care or have a say. But when you start talking about taxpayer dollar funds, how does the American government actually advocate for that almost $8 million to be spent? Like, how does the American taxpayer benefit from that?
I don't see how the American taxpayer does. And I think a lot of this stuff in certain countries, not only does it not help them very much, it doesn't help the U.S. National interest very much. I don't think Sri Lanka has a very large Islamic fundamentalist population, but imagine doing something like this in a place like Pakistan, in a place like Syria, in a place like Egypt, what have you, where you actually have a very strong, very fundamentalist Islamic-type community there. They hear about this sort of thing, instantly they can run out and say, see, look what the infidels are doing, look what these terrible people are doing, they're spreading all this gender stuff here, we don't want any part of that, so please sign up for Al-Qaeda, sign up for ISIS, sign up for Hamas, whatever it might be, and let's put a stop to this kind of chaos. So this is definitely in places like the Middle East and more conservative countries. Not only is it not productive, I think it's deeply counterproductive to what U.S. national interests are.
Well, part of the uncovering of all of this spending and really trying to claw it back has been the efforts of Elon Musk's Doge. And we've seen, of course, Elon Musk, who owns and operates Tesla, just this wild, angry outbreak of people trying to, you know, ruin the days of in a life of somebody who owns and operates a Tesla. A lot of those people are probably leftists, or maybe were at some point. Maybe they're shifting a little bit. What do you make of the reaction of the public that decides to just immediately go to this kind of rage that exists where they have to take it out on other American citizens?
Well, you know, I think it's kind of crazy. And, you know, we're saying, for example, if you're going to spend $7.6 million in Argentina to try to get LGBT, quote unquote, journalists to focus on climate change, and I ask the question, you know, does carbon dioxide affect the gay gene? Maybe they'll get to the bottom of that one. And folks like Doge and folks like Atlas Network as well point to this sort of thing and say, you know, is anybody getting any actual value out of this? And, you know, you can debate yes, you can debate no, but unfortunately what the left is doing, instead of having an intelligent discussion about this, is saying, okay, let's just set Teslas on fire. Let's take keys and scratch up the paint jobs on Teslas. Let's issue death threats. Let's stop people in the streets. And as you saw in Seattle, this woman is driving along minding her damn business. And somebody stopped in front of her, jumped out and started screaming at her, calling her a Nazi. I mean, this is just unhinged, crazy, demented behavior. And the arson you saw in Las Vegas, where they set three or four Teslas on fire. I think Austin, Texas, at a Tesla dealership yesterday, the day before, they found three incendiary bombs that were going to go off. Fortunately, were diffused, so nobody got hurt. But this is terrorism. I don't know the word for it. This is terrorist behavior. And you'd think if people had something intelligent to say and say, look, this is not such a bad program, we should keep this, this is actually doing some good, all right, come out and explain that. Maybe there's an argument for doing this sort of thing. But they don't engage in persuasion or debate. They are engaging increasingly in violence. And this is what the Democrat left has turned into. These are dangerous and violent, vicious people. And yet these are the same people who say, oh, we want civil discourse, and oh, Trump is so mean, and he's a Nazi, and he's a fascist, and all this sort of thing. And yet you don't see people on the right setting cars on fire and firing bullets into car dealerships. This is happening on the left, not on the right.
Yeah, it is. And it's almost predictable. It's how sad it is. Well, we appreciate your time today. Thanks for shifting your time a little bit so we could still get you on. Dorrie, we'll talk to you again next week.
You bet, Annie. Okay, my pleasure. Take care. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Dorrie Murdoch with us right there. So let's shift back here real quick. Let's just go live to the press conference. They're asking questions right now. Be curious to see what the questions are, what they're asking about. Let's pull it up.
And he was very careful about his communications when he was in Russia. So rest assured to the American public, this administration is taking every precaution when it comes to protecting our national security. And that's why the American people reelected this president, because they know that our national security is in good hands with the president of the United States. Speaking of the vice president, I understand he's going to be speaking any moment now. I would hate to counter-program the vice president of the United States. You'll also hear from the president at 3 o'clock. He will be honoring women's history at the Women's History Month celebration. We have a lot of great women across our cabinet
It sounds like she's wrapping up so that J.D. Vance can have the stage here. So we'll take it back here. I am continuously amazed, and I shouldn't be. It's kind of what we all suspected the whole time. Going back to Jeroy's article here and talking about the Atlas Network, which he works for. Remember, there's private entities that are trying to help specific causes all of the time who have a lot more to answer to, unfortunately, than bureaucratic government swamp creatures who just keep the thing going and probably don't even know that this type of stuff exists. In this article, Haitians, let's see here. He's talking about Haiti because, you know, the Hillary Clinton stuff in Haiti and the Clinton
Foundation
stuff. That's just It's really remarkable how much money has been swept up in these sort of, you know, human rights campaigns, these efforts made to help people who are more marginalized. All of this money comes in, and then they don't end up seeing it. I'm going to read from the paragraph in the Daily Signal here. Devolving into the party of arson is unwise for Democrats, especially after last month's Harvard-Harris survey found that 76% of U.S. voters support chopping 70% support chopping waste and fraud from federal expenditures. One need not be Milton Friedman to be enraged by what Doge uncovered just in Haiti. Since 2010, the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, has made some $2 billion in grants tied to that star-crossed Caribbean nation. Only 2% of those funds actually reach Haitian companies and organizations.
Wow, 2%. That's terrible. That's criminal.
Yeah.
That makes me mad.
It should. Do you think, like, how do you feel that, how do you think, I mean, I don't even know if, I don't know what the awareness is in Haiti, but imagine watching some of these very, very, especially relatively wealthy.
Oh my gosh, yes.
American politicians strutting around for all the support that they've lent Haiti, and you know the truth.
Yeah, and getting all the accolades and really living like royalty there is anytime they're there. And a gosh, just the hypocrisy.
$2 billion, $40 million of it to Haiti. Where's the rest of the money? Isn't that the question?
This is a little bit separate issue, but since you cited it in those stats, you know, that poll, the way that it was worded, sounded like it was asking, are you in favor of trimming waste, fraud, and abuse from government spending? 70% said yes. That tracks exactly with that stat I always bring up, that 30% of America before the election said, Joe Biden is fine. That's 30% of Americans asked that question, said, no, I don't want to trim waste, fraud, and abuse from the government.
We're going to put a button on this whole segment here, talking about the security leaks, the signal security leaks, and Joe Biden and all of that. And I'm just going to read Amy's comment. You let a dementia patient lead the country for 4 years. That alone was a walking national security risk.
Well, that just about sums up that whole segment.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
It's true. We can do the like, but what about Chuck Schumer just the other day, maybe yesterday, went to his podium and he said he expects the same outrage from Republicans regarding this issue that they did surrounding Hillary Clinton's emails. And I'm like, you don't get to do that.
No,
you don't get to do that because you didn't have outrage on it. You don't get to selectively choose when the outrage is applied. You don't get to do that. I understand the hypocrisy. You're going to say that Republicans were really, really worked up and outraged about Hillary Clinton's emails. I said that on this show. Like, we had problems with this then. We had problems with various things that were not handled the way they should and that cost Americans lives. Let's talk about Afghanistan, that stellar operation that the Biden administration had to just get done so that they could say they ended the war. They didn't care how they ended it or who died in the process. The negligence and the apathy of the Biden administration to do whatever ended up happening, collateral damage and all, if they felt like they could politically spin it their way, they just did it. From a national security standpoint, they let millions and millions and millions of people into this country, and they said that the border was secure. They lied to your face that the border was secure. So I think I can sit here and I think I can say this signal thing is a screw up and it needs to get fixed. And we need to make sure that there is something in place that doesn't allow this to happen again. They don't need Annie Fry in St. Louis, Missouri to like boldly say that, to know that. These people know that. They understand it. They didn't want this to happen. They're going to fix it. But in this case, nobody died. The mission was executed the way it was supposed to be. So if we want to do the whataboutisms, Chuck Schumer, you don't get to do that because your party's mistakes cost people lives. That hasn't been the case in this situation. I pray to God that the Trump administration and no other Democrat administration ever in the future makes a mistake that costs an American life. But to suggest that, All right, Republicans, now's the time to see if you're going to be a hypocrite about this. You need to have as much rage about this as you had about Hillary's emails.
Yeah, and
wait a second. Which Wiggins America are we doing?
Oh, we're going to do the one where I'm proving that the National Democrat brand is on the rebound.
I was going to say, I was feeling pretty strong right now, and I was about to see how flexible the new FCC chairman is. But I won't. I'm going to choose in this moment to be better than that.
I tell you what, it is fair. We'll be fair to Chuck Schumer. And I'm trying to be fair in Wiggins America, too. That's the whole theme here.
Today.
Today. when they try to bleach bit 40,000 signal messages before taking them public or to Congress.
And then take a hammer to the devices after the fact.
And then, yeah, and then hammer them all up. And, oh, by the way, just like you mentioned in that segment there, they also, 2% of all the government money that their foundation was getting on the side went to its actual cause. if all of that happens concerning this signal thing, I'm fine with getting outraged about it. We will do that.
All right.
Just to be fair.
Take a quick break. Ryan's going to explain to us how the Democrats might be on the rebound. There's a certain way you can tell from what I understand. And Ryan's going to show us the light here. Help us understand where the strength of the Democrats might be coming from. We'll be right back.
Girl, please excuse me.
Wiggins.
Oh, Wiggins.
Well, we criticize the Democrats a lot on this show, but
that's a break.
But not today. Today in Wiggins America, I am going to prove that the Democrats are on the rebound, and they're actually a highly coordinated machine, and they know exactly what they're doing. This is a clip that Brad has pulled up for me. He's going to play to start the segment.
You get your mustard hands off of our money.
I say Trump.
I don't swear in public very well, but we have to Trump. Please don't tell my children that I just did that.
Hey, I just want to correct what a couple of my colleagues said. They used that word in front of Donald Trump's name. What they meant to say, Donald Trump and Elon Musk.
So, as you can see, this is highly coordinated.
You know the woman who says, like, please don't tell my kids?
Mm-hmm.
She says, we have to.
Yeah, she says, we have to blank Trump.
I can tell she doesn't do it very much. Or the messaging is different. She got a different post-it.
Yeah. You know, that the memo that went out, maybe she just perused it before she went live. But what we have here are a lot of people.
She comes off the stage, did I do that right? And they're like, no.
Not really, but thank you.
The
coordinated effort here is to make sure that everybody knows that you are really, really mad by cussing. And that's how we know they're back. And when I first heard all the cussing, though, I was like, "Oh, maybe this is maybe this shows that they're not doing well." But no, a new CNN article that has come out has proved that cussing may be a sign of a lot of different emotions.
CNN,
yeah, CNN article.
They're like, "We gotta explain it."
So, I wanted to explain that when you hear all these things, here's what you need to think of, and I'll run these by you guys,
okay,
just to see if you think that CNN is capturing what the Democrats are going for here. The first one is that cursing may be a sign of intelligence. Well-educated people with plenty of words at their disposal, in a study recently, were better at coming up with curse words than those who were less verbally fluent. So really,
I don't.
This is a sign of intelligence.
I do say some bad words sometimes.
That's because you're intelligent.
I don't think that saying bad words ever makes anyone sound more intelligent. Ever.
Really?
Ever.
I definitely thought that first guy, putting together that you musty moo-moo. He's quite the wordsmith.
He's saying that, and I'm like, are these bad words?
It sounds like they're trying to be.
Fox is like, is that FCC compliant?
It says that these things are a sign of intelligence to the degree that language is correlated with intelligence, said the author of the study. People that are, it's funny that the quote itself doesn't quite come off as that intelligent. People that are good at language are good at generating a swearing vocabulary, says the author of this study. That's the first one. You disagreed with it, though, Annie, so we'll mark that one off.
I just don't think that your usage. You might seem more emotional.
You definitely do.
More passionate about something.
You do.
But I don't know that it makes me go, that is a smart person.
Okay, we'll get there. We'll get there. You made some good points there. Now, number two, though. Swearing may be a sign of honesty. Science has also found a positive link between profanity and honesty. People who cursed lied less on an interpersonal level and had higher levels of integrity overall.
How do you figure that out?
They're jumping around between studies, I can tell you, just by looking at the
sightings. What's your source once again? CNN?
It's CNN, but for each one of these, they're citing different studies. So it's not one study. But that one says...
I mean, if you're swearing, it's kind of hard to hide your actual thoughts or emotions. You're a little more on the face with things. So...
Because to me, whenever I hear the Democrats say blank Trump, or later they even add blank Elon Musk, I do honestly feel like that's the way that they feel about those individuals. So I think that that's probably true. I'm going to agree with that one.
Okay.
Number three is profanity improves pain tolerance.
Oh, I believe that. I've had babies.
Now, this is the one that's making a lot of the headlines right now, and the reason I think this is all back in the news, because it says, want to push through those difficult circumstances? Go ahead and drop an F-bomb. People on bikes who swore while pedaling against resistance had more power and strength.
That's bizarre to think about, like, pedaling up a hill and just being like...
God bless you if you live on a hill.
I know.
And you try biking. That's like all you hear.
Kids, earmuffs all the time.
Yeah, people riding by, if they're going one way, they're cussing. If they're going the other way, they're feeling
good. I busted
my
ankle really bad my senior year of high school. Had just had to sit out a year of sports because I transferred from a large school to a small school. And a few weeks into volleyball season, I mean, I did it bad. And I was hitting the floor and I was saying... a four-letter word. Mm-hmm. Not the big bad one. Because in the early 2000s, people didn't use that word so freely. Mm-hmm. And I remember my coach coming up to me afterwards going, I was just thinking, don't say the F word. Don't say the F word. So but at a moment of great pain, I used it. It wasn't good. I shouldn't have. Did not make me a better person for saying it.
I don't know whether this is true or not, but it always stuck with me. And this is probably 20 years ago. I heard a pastor say, and I was probably in my teens, so even earlier than that. He said, if you hit your finger with a hammer and a cuss word comes out, that's because that's what was inside of you. I was like, oh, man, that's interesting
thought.
Is he
just like really into original sin? I don't know how many times you'd hit that hammer on that finger and you finally be like, oh, I got them all out. I don't think that changes.
Yeah. So profanity improves pain tolerance. I would say that is one of the reasons that's actually maybe the primary reason the Democrats are cussing so much right now.
It's really the only usage of it that I think is actually arguably acceptable.
How about this one? Last one. Throwing expletives instead of punches. Why do we swear? Perhaps because profanity provides an evolutionary advantage that can protect us from doing or receiving actual physical harm.
I don't know that it would... I feel like it might encourage it.
Yeah.
It does seem like it's a ramp up. But they're saying that instead of doing the actual physical violence, this is in lieu of that, and it helps with it.
These people are just soft. No, don't fight. Don't fight. I'll tell you what, words can be really hateful and hurtful and painful. And there are times where sometimes you need to... you need to stop it from happening, especially if the word's coming at you or threatening. Like, I'm going to blanking, blankety blank. I don't know. You got to defend yourself.
Well, overall, I think we can agree that the Democrat brand is on the rise.
According to this study, they're doing great.
They're doing great.
Let's talk to Jonathan Butcher when we come back about the elimination of the Department of Education. Don't go away.